And with that, I'll give you Mark H. of Dallas.
What am I doing? Just pin this one?
Right on the puma.
How's that?
Good.
Does that work? Hey, everybody. I'm Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And my home group is the Clean Air Group in Dallas, Texas. And I have been sober since October the 19th of 1982. I just celebrated 20 years, for which I am incredibly grateful. And in hindsight, it had very little to do with that. Very little to do with it. Absolutely nothing to do with what happened to me the morning of October 19th of 1982. And sometimes in hindsight, very little to do with not taking a drink for a little bit over 20 years. A little bit about what it was like. Every time I go another year without drinking, I have a tendency to look back and reflect on me and the relationship that I had with alcohol. Call it your first step, if you will. My actions clearly indicated at least the last 10 years I drank. I drank for 20 years. That alcohol was first and foremost in my life, was absolutely the single most important thing in my life. That alcohol came ahead of everybody, and it came ahead of everything. I think Bill Wilson uses some words that I didn't like, but I had to look at the truth of that, and that is that it was my master and I served it. I don't know how you all drank, but boy, there comes a day that if you don't get sickened of that, I don't know how you'll ever get sober. I am not in denial about that relationship with alcohol. I'm not in denial about what the big book says, that I was a tornado roaring through the lives of other people. And there were a lot of reasons for that relationship with alcohol. I didn't take a drink till I was 16 years old. And I really needed to have taken a drink before then. My dad died of alcoholism in 86. My mother died of untreated Al-Anonism. I don't know if there's any Al-Anons in here, but you can die of untreated Al-Anonism. I watched my mother do that. And so, you know, I was raised, there's four boys in the Houston family. Well, I tell you, they're all pretty crazy. My oldest brother is an alcoholic and a drug addict. The brother below me is a bad alcoholic. My youngest brother hasn't drank in probably 6 years, probably smokes 10, 12 joints a day. That's a vast improvement over when he drank. So, you know, there was a lot of alcoholism in our family. I don't believe it's a coincidence the four Houston boys turned into drunks. When I say there was a reason why I should have drank sooner, I don't know why life so terrified me, but it did. And I think some of the reasons I didn't drink prior to age 16 was that I watched my dad and said I didn't want to be like him. And but from the very first time I took a drink, the effect produced by alcohol I experienced, and I experienced that right up to my last drink, although the last 5 or 6 years, I would use the term that alcohol stopped working. The reason I say that is because that incredible effect that it produced, you know, the magic that nothing else ever did for me, where I could be comfortable in my own skin, and I could be fearless, and I could operate in the world. That stopped happening my last 5, 6, 7 years of drinking. Now, that was one of the worst days of my life, the first time that ever happened to me. But I am grateful to God for alcohol. I really am. And again, I don't know all the reasons why I was so terrified of life and why I was so uncomfortable with myself and with you, but I just know that I was, and I know when I took that drink when I was 16 that that went away. And if that's the only thing in your life that's ever made that go away, you're going to go back to it again. And I was not a situational drinker. From the first time I picked up a drink until my last drink, I was a daily drinker. The only time that I did not drink was when I was physically separated from alcohol in some fashion. For example, when I was drafted in the military. Much to my surprise, I couldn't pick up a drink for about 3 weeks. And to this day, I remember the taste of that Budweiser after going 3 weeks without a drink. And you know, you get through high school and you get to going to college. And it took me 6 years to get through college, and that's because of my alcoholism. I got drafted and sent to Vietnam because of my alcoholism. The reason is, back then, those of you my age or when that's going on, I was studying to be a teacher, and teacher give got deferments. But because I like to party more and I like going to class, I kept dragging it out. And finally they said, you know, you've had about 6 years. I think this is about long enough. You don't seem to be anxious to graduate. We're not going to give you the deferment. Instead, we're going to draft you. So they sent me to Vietnam for 13 and a half months. Came back from Vietnam, finished up, got married. And I understand that line about Bill Wilson roaring off. We roared off to California in 1972 with a Volkswagen, $150. This young bride beside me, and here's what she had. She had a terrified Iowa farm boy in the city of San Francisco who for whatever reason, suffered from massively low self-esteem and was terrified of life. And got a job at one of the major insurance companies, and my job was to adjust claims in the city of San Francisco. Lived in Oakland, California. We had a beautiful apartment right on the beach for $125 a month. Man, I had arrived. They gave me a checkbook. I could write checks up to $15,000. And I think I was being paid $700 a month in a company car. I tell you, 1972, that's a pretty good whip. And drinking took on exciting and exhilarating parts of my life. We'd go up to Napa Valley and do wine tasting and developed a taste for wine. One time I had a real nice wine collection, as a matter of fact, but as my drinking progressed, that nice Cabernet Sauvignon changed to Boone's Farm, stuff like that. But so we were there about a year, and then like Bill Wilson says, I fancied myself a leader. They weren't taking care of me like I felt they should have. So, you know, we quit and we do another job. We went up to Eugene, Oregon. And I think, you know, when I think about that, starting around 1974, book talks about demoralization, and I begin to look at my behavior. And I think this is an important part ultimately of what brings about a surrender. But I was raised with some good values, raised in a Norwegian farming community. I knew the difference between right and wrong. I knew in that marriage to that woman that I needed to have been true to that marriage, and yet I would drink and I would commit adultery. I like to call it what it is. There's a cute thing floating around when you're married now. It's called an affair. I like to just call it what it is. I was committing adultery. And what I did in the midst of doing that was then I violated my conscience and I had to drink to cover that up. And I didn't want to do any of this. This is about alcoholism. I'm living a life unbeknownst to me at that time, and I have no choice about any of this, any of my behaviors, anything. And moved up to Portland, Oregon, 1975, came home one day and ended that marriage. And the reason I ended that marriage really is, in hindsight, is I could no longer live with myself and how I was treating that woman, because she was a good woman. A strange story about that. I made amends to her many years ago, and probably about 6 months ago, I got a phone call from her, and here she is in her early 50s, and she called me because she said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And she is an alcoholic. And she lives down in Atlanta, Georgia now. She got 4 years sobriety. Just amazing stuff happens in this program. So I left her and moved up to Seattle, Washington. And I'm a good salesman, so my drinking had not ruined my career along those lines, but it was getting close. I lived in Seattle 2 years, and then from Seattle I went up to Alaska. Boy, and if you're an alcoholic, Alaska is a place to be, I'm here to tell you. Bars closed only from 2 hours at that time, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. The only time that was a problem is in the summer, it's daylight 24 hours a day, so when you come out, when they kick you out of the bar at 3 a.m., it's still daylight, you want to keep drinking, but... bar up there called Chillicothe Charlie's, amazing place. You check your gun at the front door. I mean, just Alaska was amazing. That was the beginning of the end for me, and the reason is because of a phenomenon called craving. I was drinking and combined with other mind-altering chemicals, which shall remain nameless, in vast quantities. And I couldn't show up for work, but I couldn't close any deals. And I was calling on banks. You know, you start showing up reeking of alcohol, that starts to get back to your boss. And one day a man who loved me dearly had to come up and fire me. And so from there I wound up migrating back to Colorado. And here I am at that time, I guess I'm 34 years old, living at my parents' home. No connection at all to the fact that alcohol might be the cause of some of this. And drawing unemployment and... just the beginning of the end, you know. Not being able to look at myself in the mirror and say, what's happened, you know. When I'm a junior in high school, this wasn't in the game plan. What has happened to me? And that self-loathing that starts to take, and then you got to drink to treat all that, and then you're just in this cycle, 24-7. And I lived in that cycle for 2 years. And met a gal in a bar for Friday night. I think about a month later, we got married, and... that was May of 1982. In the beginning of the end, in the end of that thing for me, I'd gone to... She had a job, of course, at that time. You see, I couldn't work, so I had to have someone to support me. So marrying a woman, that was a fair trade-off. I'll marry you, you take care of me. And it was pretty obvious to her that she thought I had a problem with alcohol, and she had sent me to see this EAP. And this EAP hurt my feelings. She was in recovery, that's why. She just, about 15 minutes into that, she said, you're an alcoholic. She said, you're one of the six that I've seen. Here's the names of three treatment centers. Get out of here. I can't help you. And so I had a few drinks behind that one. And that's really what it was like. You know, along the way, broke hearts, robbed people of emotional security, everyone who ever cared about me. You know, I didn't see that until I've been sober quite a while. You know, you're going to make amends to people. And I've talked about this before in this group, but that first wife is the one that set me straight about robbing people of emotional security. Parents, friends, wives, children, where every night they don't know if you're going to come home or not come home. And are they going to get a phone call or not get a phone call? And, you know, I wouldn't have seen that. I wouldn't have seen that kind of harm. Horrible. Just horrible. One of the ways I've had to make a lot of amends since I got sober is I let people know where I live and my phone number, and I call them. A lot of my amends to my male friends when I got sober was, Mark, will you please let me just know you're doing okay? So I got several friends over the years. I got longtime friends, 1959. I got 40-year history with people. They love me in spite of myself, but they said, I worry about you. Of course, over the years, they've learned to keep my address now in pencil instead of ink. I move around a lot. I guess I still do that sometimes. But so, at any rate, fast forward to what happened to me. What happened was I got 12-step by a Bible-toting evangelist that my wife invited over. And I still have that Bible. I stole it from that guy. They decided that I needed a God in my life. And in hindsight, he did. He 12-stepped me. And they took me to a church that night. They were having a big revival. And I had an out-of-body experience. One of those of you who drank like I did, you've had this happen where your body's doing things and you're not involved with it, what it's doing. Is that kind of a deal? And they did an altar call. My body responded to the altar call. And I still remember this day. I'm screaming this dialogue, stop, stop, what are you doing? Someone will see you. They're doing an altar call, right? They got this big evangelist there. My body's up and I'm walking. You know, I'm saying stuff like someone will see me. I didn't know anybody. What are you doing? And anyhow, I don't know what they did that night. I think I got slapped around a little. They get enthused about that stuff. But I believe this is a part of it. That happened September 28th, 1982. And I think finally, just to get them away from me, I think what they like you to do is, I think, turn your life over to Jesus or something. I can't remember. But I pretty well got clear that they were not going to release me until I did whatever it is they needed done. So I think I told them to do it. And I did that. And I believe there's a strong connection between that act that night and then getting sober on October 19th. Through a series of events, I checked myself into a detox and treatment center October 19th, 1982. And first 2-3 years of sobriety were tough for me because I was so damaged. I had brain damage and I had some liver damage and kidney damage. The most basic fundamental life skills I had totally forgotten. And again, this is just how I drank. I never forget. I didn't have a car the first couple of years. I remember going to open a checking account and they informed me that I couldn't do that because I had a lot of outstanding checks and I had no recall of a single one of them. When I went to Alaska to make amends, I was off a year when I thought I lived there. I felt like I was in a Cheech and Chong movie my first 2-3 years sober. I'd go shopping in the grocery store and I'd be going pushing the cart and I'd look at something and I'd go, wow, look at that. And you know, my pal says, Mark, they've had that in the store for 15 years. I'd been busy and like I'd go to a movie. You know, I hadn't gone to a movie in years because they don't serve booze and stuff in there. And like I'd ride the bus and I'd be going along and I'd hear a bird singing and I'd go, wow, man. It was amazing. I wish I'd stayed in that state longer. I didn't. Somewhere around two, three years, I came out of that state, and man, I was dry. And whoa, it was not a pleasant picture. Because see, I don't know how to do life without alcohol, and I'm about 2, 2.5 years. I mean, this is exactly how I experienced this. It literally felt like I came zooming out of some kind of a blackout at around 2.5 years sober, and I'm looking around and married to this woman who, quite frankly, I didn't even like, I realized. And I'm working. God does take care of us. When I was about 5 days out of that treatment center, I went to a meeting. This guy came up afterwards and said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I mean, like, do you have a job? I goes, no. And he said, well, I'm looking for some salesman. He said, I said, well, selling what? And he said, well, cameras, video. And I said, I don't know anything about that. And he said, you're a salesman. I can teach you that. And I said, well, okay, I don't have any way to get to work. He said, I'll pick you up. So at the end of those first 2 years, he wound up hiring 4 more drunks. And within 6 months, we broke every record that company had for sales. And I remember the president one time, he said to him, what do you do with those guys? And he said, oh, they're just happy to be breathing, you know? He would drive the van. He would drive the van and pick us up. So we'd have a meeting going into work, and then we were captured all day long there. Then he'd drop us home at night and then pick us up again, take us to a meeting, drop us off again. That's all I did for 2 years, you know? And it was amazing. But when I came out of that thing, I'm married to this woman, and then along the way, I'd been promoted to manager. I mean this. When I came to around this, keep in mind, I'm somewhere between 2.5-3 years sober. It felt like I was in a blackout those first 2.5-3 years. So I guess what I want to tell you, if you're fairly new and think you're well, you're not. You know, you're really not. And so when I came out of that blackout, sober blackout, I don't know how else to say it. Here I am. I'm managing this store that does about $3 million a year with 25 employees. And I'm going, my God, how did I get here? I'm married to this woman. I mean it. I just didn't like her. And oh, it was incredible. And we bought a house. I got this $1,200 a month house payment, right? You know, and I got honeydew projects. And I don't have any tools to do any of this at that time. And, of course, I hadn't done anything with the steps. I wasn't capable of doing anything with the steps. Go to meetings, and I'm sure you all said some great things. never heard any of it. Yeah, you know, if you'd have told me what I was doing there, I told you I was doing real well. Just incredible when I look back. And so finally, I think somewhere around three and a half years, some of you know my pal Joe, and he had started working with Don P. And I thought I was sick, but I kind of made a judgment. I thought Joe was sicker, and he was getting better. So I thought, well, okay. So I did went through the steps with Don, and that was pretty amazing. And I had about 3.5-4 years of some pretty amazing stuff going on in my life, going through the steps and making amends, and that marriage, ended that marriage. Continued to work there, doing whatever, and I don't know, in hindsight, depression, somewhere between my 7th and my 10th year, depression started to settle in on me. Either depression settled into me, on me, or I've just been depressed most of my life, and I started to wake up to it. Mm-hmm. And it slowly began to take me over, and it wasn't fun. It almost took me out of here. And there was a thing that had happened to me at that time, and that was that, keep in mind, this is in the 80s, and there was a belief system perpetuated at that time fairly strong of the steps will do everything. Nothing but the steps, right? Well, I probably needed to have been taking something along with the steps, but didn't because of that belief system. Of course, I didn't go see a psychiatrist. I didn't do anything. This depression's getting worse and worse and worse, and so I switched jobs, lose the house, went through a bankruptcy. And then I'm getting in that place of hopelessness, getting sober. I'm coming up on nine and a half years, and it was as dark as I've ever been, and I couldn't drink, call it what you will. God don't want you drinking, you're not drinking. I don't care what the circumstances are. And but hopelessness, and I was reduced to sitting in an apartment and actually crying all the time. It was not a fun deal. Now, a lot of that, quite frankly, is some of it is associated with a lot of my life experiences. And I needed to have been doing something for it, which, by the way, the big book told me to do, but I ignored that, right? Because I'm concerned about, after all, what you think. And that would be real weak of me to do that. It's funny about that. Today I take the big book in its entirety, and but I completely ignored that. And it almost killed me, by the way, where it says seek out other good doctors. And make a long story short, a series of interventions, I wound up in a psychiatric hospital, more affectionately known as a nut house, in Houston, Texas. And I needed to be there. I couldn't work. I couldn't function in society. And it wasn't that I was insane, but I was at a place of hopelessness beyond anything I could have told you. And sometimes when I look back, I had a surrender in the hospital that to this day stands me in good stead. And I'll tell you what the surrender looked like. The surrender looked like this. You know, God, you know, I drank for 20 years. I'm 36 when I come to AA. I'm probably 44 then. I got 10 years sober. And I don't know, God, if it just seems like when I'm trying to get involved with any part of my life and what it looks like and who's here, it don't go well. So here's the deal, buddy. From now on, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care where I live. I don't care what I do. I don't care if I'm single. I don't care if I'm married. I do not care. Because somehow in my caring, something happens, and I don't do well. And from that day to this, that is the position in which I go through life. You know, you build with me, and you do with me as you want. And so, you know, in the future, if you all ask me why did I move here or whatever, just assume my answer is going to be is because that's where God wanted me. Because I don't care. Because when I care, I get in trouble. Because when I get in care, I want to try and manage my life and who's in it and what they look like and how they act and blah, 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 you know. It's not a pretty thing. And I got out of that place, and I reworked the first 9 steps 4 times in the first 2 years. Really, really started work with the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step. Began a daily meditation life. So my life since then has just took off like a rocket. 94, I started to get asked to do a little speaking here and there, which, by the way, I wanted nothing to do with. You see, this, it's paradoxical, you know, you and I mean this. I wanted nothing to do with it. And some days I'm still that way. I'd rather just sit in the back of the room, you know. And but one day a fairly wise man said to me, you know what? You made a third step decision, and you have a gift, and you need to share that gift. So you better get over it. Okay. All right. Okay, I'll do this thing. You know, I tell you, I really started work with alcoholics. I started getting asked to start workshops and taking people through the steps. And of course, what happened to me, and it might have happened to some of you, but this is just for me. I try and get clear with people. Is today, I know the things that I, Mark Houston, has to do to be at peace in my skin with myself, with God, and with you. I know what I have to do. And it doesn't mean anyone else in AA has to do that. So when I share with you what I do, it's because I have to do it and I like the effect produced. I've had to write inventory many times on why can't I be a middle of the road guy? You know, I really wished I could have been. I try it and I get sick. I wish all I could do is go to meetings and not drink. I mean it. Not the way it works. I don't do well. So for me, what really had to happen, I just had to stay very active in the steps, and I had to really work with a lot of people. And I literally began a 10-year journey, pretty intense journey, unbeknownst to me, of working with people. Hundreds of people. Workshops. Going into groups in which I can assure you that my experience with the message out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was not popular. You know, and I suspect we all go through that too. Somewhere in here, you know, you have to decide, am I going to share my experience and my experience with the message out of the book, or am I going to be concerned about what someone thinks about it? And I reached a place where I no longer cared what anybody thought about it. I go anywhere, I'm a free man. This is what I have to do. I speak out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous because that was the solution for my alcoholism. If there's any disclaimer I ever give people, it's this. If I ever say anything you can't reconcile with the Big Book, ignore it. And the other thing I tell people, don't ever let anyone read your Big Book for you. Why? I work in the field of chemical dependency. I've been working in 12 years. I probably personally have got a chance to meet and somehow experience well over 15,000 to 20,000 alcoholics and drug addicts. This is a deadly, deadly illness. I get to experience a picture far beyond the single rooms of AA. And I'm telling you, they're still dying in droves. So you ain't about to see a guy like me walk into a meeting of AA and say, he'll keep coming back, he'll get better, because it won't. That's my experience. I buried a lot of people. This is a deadly thing you've got, and if you're a real alcoholic, you need some power in your life. The steps are the method in which we experience that power. I don't soft sell this program. You know, externally, my life today, it's the best it's ever been. I could sit and tell you some neat stuff about that, but I want to tell you also, a year from now, it could be a lot different. So I don't spend a whole bunch of time with that. You know, I mean, really, I'm earning more money than I've ever made in my life. CEO of a company doing what I love to do, and that's all real neat. But 3 years ago, I was unemployed. So that all changes. So I don't pay much attention to that. I mean, I really don't. And because my paying attention to that gets me in trouble. I live in a world of impermanence, and I want to attach to this nice job or a woman. Or real. I've discovered that's not wise. I attach to the moment. I'm mostly concerned with being present wherever I am. It doesn't make much difference to me where I'm at, who I'm with, and what I'm doing. What makes a difference, can I be present? You know, today I had an amazing spiritual experience. Today I spent 4 hours in a Russian bath. I had a spiritual experience. I tell you what, I walked out there and it felt like I'd had 19 shots of Thorazine. I was so relaxed. See, this is what recovery's done. I mean, I'll be talking about that bath for months to come. That was an amazing experience, see? Thank God I'm awake to that. See? Get to come back here and spend some time with people I've grown to love and care about. What a wonderful life I got. You know, and it comes from those steps. For me, those disciplines of 10 and 11 are crucial. I don't know, sometimes I look back and I think the program really is about 10 and 11. 1 through 9, I think sometimes there's way too much attention given. The action I take, really, in 4 through 9, 1 through 3 are considerations, are they not? I mean, think about it. You know, mental considerations. You know, am I a real alcoholic? You know, do I believe to drink is to die? Do I have a phenomenal craving, obsession of the mind, a spiritual malady? Yes, no. It's not rocket science, this stuff. Yeah, you know. Well, do I need power to do something about that? Yeah. You know, am I willing to make that power everything in my life? You know, I tell people, it's your call if you don't want to. I don't care. I'm here to dance my dance, sing my, you know, I'm doing just fine. You know, yeah, that power's, yeah, okay, I'll do that. Sure, why not? You know, are you convinced your life and your will doesn't work? Well, I'm not sure. Well, let's look at your life, how nifty it is. You know, no one will talk to you, and you know, stuff like that, right? Yeah, well, I guess I'm convinced of that. You know, well, then, okay, you got to make a decision. Turn your will and life over to this power, and here's some reason why you might want to consider doing that. You know? Okay, then how do you do that? Well, now we got to write. What? Oh, yeah, we got to write. Three inventories. Well, I don't know if I want to do that. Well, let's see. Dying alcoholic death, write inventories. Well, now that you mention that, in that context, so you write a resentment inventory, a four column, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory. You get after it. Why? Because you need power. Face and be rid of that which has you blocked. Dying alcoholic death, write inventory. Yeah, sure. That sounds like a fair trade-off. Then you sit down and read it to somebody, right? You know? And hopefully they have enough courage to tell you the truth about what they see, because it's no longer their fault out there, you know what I mean? Because all your troubles are your own making. And you get done with that inventory, and you look at a whole bunch of defects you saw as a result of trying to live your life based on your will, going through life like an ingrown hair, taking everything personal, it's all about you. You know how it is. Even at our age, we're looking at how many presents are there for me under the tree. Offer that up to God in the seventh step, you know. Make a list of people you harm. Go sit across from people. Write letters. Make phone calls. Clean it up. No big deal. You made some mistakes. That's all. You can't defeat the ego. The ego takes the best of you. I don't care how long you're sober. That's why the book says, I made mistakes. There isn't anybody in this room that ever woke up one day and said, you know, I got nothing else to do. I think I'm going to go harm someone today. You know? They just don't work that day. You know, we're programmed in a certain fashion. Today, I had a rare thing happen to me. I had a member of AA call me the other day to make amends to me. Because, you know, we don't do that within the fellowship, right? And I said to him, I very much appreciate you doing that, but I said, you don't have any power to hurt me. And he said, what do you mean? I said, because I know that you didn't choose to do what it is you did. And most of the amends by members of AA to me are about they assassinated my character. Most of the time, they don't even know me. They've never met me. But you know how it is, if somebody is sharing something that is differs a little from your experience and you hear some truth that resonates, you get a little angry about that, a little edgy. At least I always do. Maybe I'm the only one. But so, you know, you go out and you make those amends. You pay the money back and you make amends to those people you robbed emotional security from. You ask them, what can I do to set the books right, you know? And the freedom behind all that is just beyond belief. See, I'm a free man. I'm free to go anywhere. I'm not carrying nothing behind me. I get to live in the present moment of my life because there ain't nothing back here anymore. And I stay real current with that. You know, I still fall asleep sometimes. I do things, but I'll wake up to it. And I take care of it right away and clean the stuff up. And God, what a quality of life I had today because of this program, because of what I learned in the big book, get a chance to go to meetings and share with others. So that's all I got. It's good to be here. Thanks.